Well, happy Thursday. We dodged a bullet yesterday, didn't we? Thought we were going to have some really nasty weather come swooping through our area. And yeah, there were some scattered showers, a little bit of wind, and I think one or two places might have picked up some sporadic hail. But other than that, maybe a few downed trees and bushes, but we are here on the flip side of it. The sun is shining. It's time for another Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thanks so much for tuning our way. And if you would like to communicate telephonically or through any of the other methods that we now have of exchanging information and comments and opinions, it's 414-1234, the local number, 800-926-8809, long distance. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email, or you can send us a tweet at WFSU Perspective. For some of us of a certain, shall we say, demographic target, lifelong dental health care used to follow this very, very simple plan. Get fillings, and if your parents had money, braces when you're a kid, then get extractions and dentures when you're old. Problem solved. That was the way that much dental health care in this country went. But in recent years, a growing body of research has shown that proper dental care throughout life can reduce the incidence of everything from heart disease to diabetes and a whole host of other maladies. And yet, in the larger discussion of access to health care insurance, not much has been said about expanding the number of people who can access affordable dental insurance. So there is so much to talk about, and we're going to do that on this morning's Perspectives. We have a group of fine folks from the Florida Dental Association who have joined us. They're going to talk about a two-year blueprint that they have come up with following a lot of discussion and research and interaction with other stakeholders and partners. And we're going to also be focusing on your concerns and questions as well. So please feel free to jump in at any time and say hi. Let's say hi first to our panel who are gathered here around the table. First off, Drew Eason, Executive Director and CEO of the Florida Dental Association. Drew, it's good to have you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for having us again.
Working hard down at the Capitol, of course, Joanne Hart, who is FDA Director of Governmental Affairs. This is your time of the year.
Yes, Joanne. It is. Thank you, Tom. I'm glad to be here, and it is. It's a little calmer today, which is nice. At the Capitol.
Okay, and we'll try to keep the representatives and senators at bay while we're talking here today, okay? Dr. Bill Diotto joins us too, FDA President, member of the Workforce Innovation Task Force, which developed the Florida's Action for Dental Health Initiative. Dr. Bill, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing fine. Thank you so much for having us and leading this discussion today towards greater dental health for our population.
It is our pleasure for sure. And we end up with Panama City kind of gal, Dr. Jolene Paramore, FDA Vice President and Chair of the Workforce Innovation Task Group. And Dr. Jolene, thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Tom. We're really excited to be here and to share our message with your viewers.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about this this two-year plan that you guys just came out with here, the progress report from the Florida Dental Association, the Action for Dental Health Thing. What is in this document here? Dr. Bill?
Well, basically, it's a document that kind of lays out a comprehensive outline of initiatives to improve the access to dental health for all Floridians, because really the Florida Dental Association dentists feel that a healthy mouth is essential to a healthy body, and we feel that it's as important for pediatrics as it is geriatrics, and all Floridians need and deserve quality dental health care. And that's what this outlines, is several initiatives and plans to that point.
What specifically are some of the ideas that can open up dental health care to a wider variety of people? We know that if you have dental insurance through your employer, at least that is a good start of having accessibility and affordability when it comes to dental care. But how do you get that out to more people? That's what we've been talking about with regular health care. But what about dental care at the same time? How do we do that?
Well, I think, first of all, we have to look at community fluoridation projects for community water supplies throughout the state. It's been shown that fluoridation of water supplies can eliminate decay by up to 45%, which is the most common healthcare disease for children and actually all adults.
We have fluoride in Tallahassee's municipal water supply, right?
Correct.
Okay. I think that many people in Tallahassee say, okay, well, this is a universal. We have it. Just about everyone else has it. True? Not true.
No, sir. That's unfortunately not true. I had spoke with a dentist in Gaston County not long ago, and she said that she could simply tell where the child was from by looking in their mouth, because some of the communities in Gaston County do have the water fluoridation and some do not. It's really incredible that in this day and age that we don't have that wonderful benefit that the Centers for Disease Control have been recommending for over 60 years, that we don't have that 100% in Florida.
And what is our percent in Florida?
At this time, we're about 77% fluoridated for the entire state, and that number can fluctuate. I think those stats we have are from 2014. And the reason why, because it is a local option. We do not mandate for cities and counties to fluoridate their water systems. We think it's something that it should stay a local option. There are grants available through the Department of Health to help with those initiatives, and that's something that the Florida Dental Association has supported and continually supports. Last year, we were excited to actually get funding allocated to the Department of Health for those cities and counties to apply for those grant funds. In the past, we've only received federal trust funds from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, but this is an initiative that we're looking to continue to get water fluoridation throughout all communities in Florida.
Okay, so roughly one-third then of people in Florida do not have the benefits of fluoridated water. Is this back to something I think that took place probably in the first President Roosevelt administration when chlorine was proposed as being added to municipal water supplies, and there was this hue and cry from many folks that chlorine is a deadly poison? It kills people. You put it in water, you'll be putting folks at risk. How could we do that? Are we doing the same thing with fluoride still, like more than 100 years later?
I think the problem that there is misinformation out there. One of the things that we emphasize is that when you apply the optimal level of fluoridation to the water supply, which is 7 parts per million, then it is the optimal level for dental health. Unfortunately, there's a lot of information on the website, on the internet, that is incorrect. And for some folks, when they see that information, they take that as fact. At the Florida Dental Association has just released a video, Facts on Fluoridation, which can be viewed on www.floridafluoridation.org. And that video will give you information from the perspective of the local medical community, dental health community, as well as local officials and even Tallahassee's own water operator that provides the facts on fluoridation.
414-1234, the number for perspectives. We have members of the Florida Dental Association here with us. In fact, the entire leadership team and some members of the special task force that came up with a 2-year progress report on dental health in Florida and providing some ideas about how to promote greater access to dental health care on the part of kids and folks in middle age and all the way into the senior community, and would love to hear from you, too. Are we still fighting some of those battles, though, beyond fluoridation, which, again, just absolutely astounds me? We'd still be talking about this years and years after so many communities adopted fluoride and found that it is efficacious when it comes to helping keep especially kids' teeth healthier and even grown-ups' yeah. teeth healthier. But what are some of the other maybe things that you have been fighting as far as we don't need this or we shouldn't have that? Julie?
Well, Tom, I'd just like to say that many feel like there's not capacity in the dental community for taking care of patients. And one thing that we've really been working hard on is helping patients navigate the system. We have what's called a community dental health coordinator. That's a dental team member that works like a community medical worker to help get patients to those facilities where they do have care available for them. When we do our Mission and Mercy programs, we pass out resource guides. The Florida Dental Association's foundation has a series of clinics across the state called Project Dentist Care Clinics, where they provide pro bono care. So I think one of the big things that we're fighting is just having patients know where to go. And by having this member of the team that can help patients get to where care is available for them, that's one thing that we're really working on. And I think Joanne has some information for us also on our progress with that.
Yes, Joanne, go ahead.
Thank you. I think one of the interesting parts about the community dental health coordinator, which is very beneficial, it is an individual from that community that understands the culture of the community and maybe understands some of the stigmas or some of the fears that individuals may have to accessing dental care. We all know that people will use expressions like it's like pulling teeth or, you know, individuals that are fearful from going to the dentist. But this individual can help alleviate those fears with education. And one of the other things that we found when we actually did a pilot project down in the Treasure Coast with the community center there is that not only individuals that come in for their oral health care, they also start accessing their medical care and other resources that can be found in facilities like community health centers and county health departments. So not only are they getting their oral health taken care of, but they're getting their whole body along with their medical care addressed as well.
So a more holistic approach then, because traditionally dental care in this country has almost been conceived of as a luxury that, oh, yes, I got my heart disease taken care of. My diabetes is under control. But if there's any money left over, and very often there isn't, then we'll have those cavities or that periodontal disease or whatever taken care of, right?
Tom, education is such an important part of the whole process. A lot of people seem to believe that you don't need to go to the dentist until it hurts. And it's much like your car. If you're not getting your oil changed regularly, watching the pressure in your tires, it's going to be a lot more expensive. The same is with dentistry. And a lot of folks will wait until they're swollen or have an infection before they even think about going to the dentist. And I'm also talking about people who have insurance. Nearly 50% of people with insurance don't go to the dentist on a regular basis.
Is it much of it still that fear of pain? Like you were saying, Joanne, oh my gosh, it was like a root canal. And yet root canals are virtually painless today.
It's true. I'd say anxiety is...
Hold that thought, Dr. Okay. Bill. We'll get that on the other side of the break, which is rapidly bearing down on us. We're members of the Florida Dental Association here with us on Perspectives this morning, and we'd love to hear from you. 414-1234, the local number, 800-926-8809. If long distance twixt you and us, we'll be right back. We are back on Perspectives. We're talking dentistry, and again, something that has gotten just such a traditionally bad rap. All pain and agony and terrible things happen in the dentist chair, and maybe about, I don't know, 45, 50 years ago, that certainly was true. I remember my very first dental visit, although, to his credit, the dentist did no work at all. He sat me in the chair, and he propped open my mouth, and he was very, very kind and gracious and polite. Said, he did all of this stuff and said, you're looking pretty good. Why don't we see you in a couple weeks? And I thought, this isn't bad at all. Of course, when I came back, there were a couple fillings he had to do, and that was back in the days of the old low-speed drills. Remember those with the belts? And there was no kind of anesthetic or anything. It wasn't the most comfortable thing in the world, for sure. But in the intervening years, other things have happened. Dr. Bill, we started before the break to talk a little bit about, again, that fear and how that may impact some people holding off going to the dentist until it is almost a catastrophic situation. How do you get in front of that?
Exactly. And that's very true. I think, there's a lot of misconceptions out there about dentistry in today's world. But some key findings from a survey that we've had of 15,000 Florida adults about their oral health and questioning them did show that squarely 25% of the respondents cited dental anxiety as a cause for their not taking care of their dental care. But in today's world, there's various forms of sedatives, sedation, nitrous oxide, which is known as laughing gas, And then just going to a very caring professional that you stated earlier, which is the majority of the people that I know in the profession, talking with these individuals, maybe giving them some mild oral sedatives in order to calm their nerves and anxiety, and then build up that confidence that possibly has put their ability to get dentistry at bay. Perhaps they were scared by relatives, you know, who had not so good experiences in the past. And that's usually what carries to, you know, the children is how the patients, how that patient's parents were. So right now, trying to break down those barriers is huge. And that's, you know, the education that all Florida Dental Association dentists can give their patient base.
Okay. And Joanne, getting back to something that you said, which I thought was so instructive, that you sometimes have a familial or a cultural tradition to overcome. I know some folks who have said, oh, well, the kids have some cavities, but that's okay. It's their baby teeth. They'll fall out and it'll be taken care of on its own. But that is not a good start to a lifelong dedication to, you know, good oral care, right?
No. I think one of the things that's important, and we've said this again and again, is oral education, oral health education. When that first tooth erupts for a baby, even before then, you should wipe the gums of excess of milk. You should also start having that young child have a toothbrush in their hand so they can understand that this is for cleaning their teeth. And it's important to get them in to see a dentist at around a year old. A lot of folks will wait until the child probably is school age. And by that time, they're five, and they probably have a lot of dental decay just from having juice sit on their teeth or even, again, milk. I mean, and it's interesting with parents not understanding that even milk sitting on the teeth can cause dental decay. So oral health education is paramount to those early interventions.
Some of the things, though, that prevent that early experience positive, we hope, with a dentist is just that whole financial consideration. And Dr. Jolene, we said this right before the break, that sometimes that is the determinant factor, that even with a decent dental plan, that old reasonable and customary charge thing can nail you because insurance will cover $39 of a extraction, let's say. Our own Ronald J. Eppen, because he got me this morning, said, "You're going to talk to the dental guys, aren't you?" I said, yeah. He said, "I just had an $1,100 extraction." Well, it wasn't just the tooth coming out. There was some, I think, bone rebuilding and all that. But still, it left him with a pretty big chunk of out-of-pocket there. What do we do about dental insurance to make it a little bit more, you know, reasonable?
Well, dental insurance usually has a calendar year maximum, and that hasn't changed since the 70s. So we're looking at going on 50 years of really no change in the dental benefit structure. Unfortunately, many of the plans don't pay what they appear to promise. And whenever a patient comes in and says, oh, my insurance pays 80%, the next question is 80% of what? And so whenever you have a plan that your out-of-pocket is more than your premium that you're paying, a lot of times that is a big deterrent. And how we can get the insurance companies to help restructure that, there's been some definite improvements because of the oral systemic link, healthy mouth, healthy body. One of the large companies, United Concordia, did a large study that showed that by offering more preventive care to patients and patients that were diabetic, offering them cleanings three times a year, four times a year instead of just twice a year, actually reduced their medical expenses by up to $20,000 per patient. So once we get studies that show that by having good oral health, that translates over into reduced medical cost, then I think you're going to see some improvement in the benefits. And those studies are just being out now.
Oh, because that would make a lot of sense if you look at the other aspects of the commercial insurance market. Bundling is the big cost saver for many companies because they cover you for your car and your home and your life. It's all one big old policy, and the rates come down based on that. Why don't more medical insurance providers also piggyback dental coverage? since the two are now related. They're not two separate things. Drew, is that something you guys are working on? Or?
Oh, we're always working on that, and there's advantages and disadvantages. Dental traditionally has not been bundled in with medical. It's been on its own, and depending on who you talk to, some people would prefer to keep it that way, a little less bureaucratic, a little less challenges than they would be. And it gets lost. If you think about the budget for medical sometimes, the dental is often not given a sufficient amount to cover the needs.
Yeah, but especially since there is that linkage that has been now established through all the research, and you have better oral health, you have better physical health and other aspects. And the two are connected. They're not separate things. But that's something for the insurance folks to play with, I'm sure. What about this particular legislative session? And I guess, Joanne, that's kind of your bailiwick. Are there any particular things that this legislature is working on that also connects with you guys in the Dental Association?
Yes. This year, we're looking to get support from the state for donated dental services program. This program is a program that provides donated care to individuals who are medically compromised, elderly, and disabled. We have over 400 dentists, volunteer dentists, and more than 200 dental labs that actually provide these services free of charge for these individuals that qualify for this program. Now, what we're looking to do is get financial support from the state at $170,000. And by using those funds, we're able to hire two full-time coordinators plus operating expenses. I will tell you, Tom, this program is operational in all 50 states through an entity called Dental Lifeline Network. And for all of those states that have state support funding, it is consistent. It is we know that it's going to be there for those individuals, and it's successful. So we're trying to get the state of Florida to put $170,000 into this program so that we can so individuals can access these donated services that are free of charge for these individuals.
All right. As we still have about a $2 billion gap between House and Senate budgets right now, is it in one and not the other, or is it in both or none?
Well, we're excited to report that the Senate has included funding in their budget for donated dental services. Actually, the Senate's budget is very supportive of the Florida Dental Association initiatives. At this time, we're encouraging the House to look at those items and to pick them up. We feel that, again, this is going to help reduce costs on the emergency room side. So specifically, this program is provided for individuals who have a medical condition. So if you need a knee replacement, your physician will tell you, before I can do your knee replacement, you need to go get your oral health, maybe if you have periodontal disease. Go get that taken care of, because if not, you may have an infection that can get into the bloodstream that can impact them trying to do the knee replacement. So what happens is that individual now has to go seek dental care. If they are not on Medicaid or if they don't have private dental insurance, these are the individuals that are caught in the gap, the working poor. They don't have access. That's where our volunteers come in, and they're able to provide those services free of charge again. Again, the $170,000 is for two coordinators. We need the coordinators to help get the patients to the dentist and the dentist to the patients.
Because right here in the Tallahassee area, there is one group that every year does pro bono periodontal work, and the number of people who show up for those clinics is just incredible. Yeah.
We have, through our foundation, which is the charitable arm of the Florida Dental Association, we provide some safety net programs through our Project Dentist Care Clinics, which there are over 50 clinics around the state, which are all volunteer, but also our signature event, which is the Mission of Mercy. We just held that in Pensacola. This was our third event, and we saw nearly 2,000 patients and did over $1.5 million worth of care in 2 days. We had 1,645 volunteers, both dental professionals as well as community volunteers, that all worked together, spent 2 days setting up the event, and then 2 days treating patients. And unfortunately, it just scratches the surface of the need. But we know that charity care is not a healthcare system. And so we really need to work together with all our elected officials, with all the community stakeholder groups, to have after-mom programs. So after we leave a community, we take the data that we get from the impact study, and then we try to implement programs that are specific for the needs of that community.
414-1234 members. In fact, the entire leadership team just about of the Florida Dental Association here with us this morning on Perspectives. Cassie joins us on line one. Hi, Cassie.
I had a dentist and a periodontist probably saved my life because the periodontist found my cancer. So it's really important. But what I need now is I am looking for a prosthodontist because I hardly have any of my lower gum left because it was surgically removed from the cancer surgery. So I'm looking for a prosthodontist, someone that can get me a prosthetic so that I can have teeth. Either, you know, just for appearance or to use them, because I just have, like, two teeth on my lower gum, and my gums are gone.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Oh, my gosh, Cassie, sorry to hear about that. Any resources available for Cassie? Guys, Drew?
Sure, and you heard Dr. Paramore mention Project Dentist Care not long ago. If you go to the Florida Dental Association's website, floridadental.org, that's all one word, floridadental.org, and then you click on the Florida Dental Association Foundation link, you will find a bunch of names and numbers of dentists and clinics in the area by county. It's called Project Dentist Care. I would like to say that that none of them would have a waiting list, but some of them will. But that is absolutely a great place to start. Not sure of things like age and things like that, but one of the things Joanne was just talking about, donated dental, may also be something that would be an option. And you can find that by calling our office, and we can transfer it over to that. Our number is 850-681-3629, 850-681-3629, and hopefully we can point you in the direction of some resources.
Oh, thank you so much for calling, Cassie. Good luck with that. That has got to be discouraging, but at least if you had not gone to the periodontist and that discovery had not been made, the outcome may have been even worse.
And Tom, that's certainly something I think that it's important. Sometimes when we think about oral health, we only think about cavities and periodontal disease. But oral cancer has moved into the sixth leading cause of cancer deaths in the United States. And part of every comprehensive oral evaluation includes an oral cancer screening. And again, as a periodontist, unfortunately, I do quite a few biopsies, and we do have patients that we find lesions that are malignant. And so that's another benefit of having even a screening examination that we did for every patient that came to the Mission of Mercy. All of those patients, when they had their exam, they also had oral cancer screening.
Dr. Jolene, while we're on the subject, I got to ask you, as far as general practitioner type dentists are concerned, is there a greater awareness now of the number of folks who have periodontal disease as maybe compared to about 20 years ago? Because it just was not a thing.
Absolutely. There were some studies done in the 80s that showed only about 25% of general practitioners did a periodontal evaluation, the measurements where they probed the pockets to see do you have periodontal disease or not. And now that number has significantly increased through a lot of continuing education, a lot of awareness of the oral health and systemic health link. We know that patients that are diabetic, if their periodontal disease is out of control, their diabetes is more difficult to control. We know that's a two-way street. So there's so many things that we can educate the patients about so that they're now coming to general dentists who maybe don't do measurements and say, hey, my friend had these dental exams that found out they had pockets. Do I have pockets? So when we increase that overall awareness of the general population, this is something that they need to be concerned about for their overall body health, their heart health, preterm low birth weight babies, aspiration pneumonias that happen from patients who, again, especially in nursing home facilities, have a higher risk of getting pneumonia. And when they have the test, they find that those are oral bacteria.
Because that's just a persistent infection, and it leaves you wide open for all other kinds of nasty stuff, right?
That's exactly right.
Okay. So we had talked fluoridation a little bit ago, and we got an email just a moment back of someone asking, do commercial water filters take out fluoride? Does that take it out of the water?
No, it doesn't. That's one of the questions that we've gotten before, and those commercial water filters does not take out fluoridation. One point of information, fluoridation is a naturally occurring mineral in the water. And Duval County is one that has a very high level of natural fluoridation. And so they actually, for their area, they use reverse osmosis, a machine that actually reverses the amount of fluoridation in their water system to get to the 7 parts per million. So it is a very industrialized machine that has to do that work. So the commercial, the commercial water filters does not take fluoridation out.
Ah, so in Duval County, Mama Nature is part of the conspiracy, eh?
More on a local level, a Mexico Beach down in Bay County and in Gulf County with St. Joe Beach. Those have a very high incidence of naturally occurring fluoride in their water system.
That is remarkable. Yeah. That really is. Dr. Diotto, what are some of the trends in dentistry right now that are reasons perhaps beyond the things we've been talking about with the affordability and accessibility and all that? Is there reason for hope that maybe more folks are getting good dental care today than did previously?
Well, part of the conversation that we were just having earlier with Dr. Paramore on the discovery of periodontal disease and things like that in the patient bases is that we are teaching all dentists in the dental schools, the 3 dental schools that we have in the state of Florida, a really wonderful, comprehensive examination process. Because it isn't just, because we're not going to be able to drill and fill or do surgery, you know, our way out of the dental diseases that we see in the population. To get back to the MOMS program, then I'll get back to the education.
Okay,
and
I can give you a chance to really expand upon this here. Let's take this quick break, and then we'll be right back and talk again about the training of the dentists who are actually doing the root work, if you will, in some cases. Anyway, on Perspectives, as we talk with members of the Florida Dental Association, 414-1234, the number to call, or 800-926-8809. If it's long distance between you and us, we'll be right back. We are back on Perspectives. Oh, a reminder, too, you can always find Perspectives online at WFSU.org. Just go to our website, click on Radio, pull down Programs, and Perspectives will pop right up. Click on that, and you can check out programs from even years gone by. We try to have the most current program up and online within a couple of 3 hours after the program airs. Get it on for you just as quick as we possibly can. Back with you, Dr. Bill Diotto, talking about the training regimen that now modern-day dentists go through to try to take that more holistic approach to their patients. It's not just their own little area, but they're looking at a big, wide world now, huh?
Absolutely. I mean, it's incumbent upon all general dentists because basically they are the quarterback of the dental team because most patients, with insurance or without, come to see a general dentist first for whatever problem that they have or trying to replug in if they've been transferred to a new community. So the basis for a great dental examination has to do with looking at all of the intraoral systems, the bite, because there are bite diseases that cause, it's called malocclusion, that can cause you to lose a tooth. The periodontal diseases that we've talked about, a comprehensive probing of every new patient, at least over the age of 18, needs to happen in a general dental office so that you can start to avert an emerging problem. Because periodontal disease starts with gum infection or gingivitis. Well, gingivitis is completely reversible if caught early, but yet most people who have gingivitis have a little bit of periodontitis, and we always think that it's a later life occurrence. Oh, it is not. We have found early periodontitis in even 8, 9, 10-year-olds. It can happen much earlier because many times that disease, even though it's preventable with better home care and education, better diet, you know, all of that comes with that first examination. So a good examination takes into effect not just looking at teeth, not just looking at radiographs, but also looking at jaw joints or TMJs, looking at bite malformities, and looking at the gums, and then just talking to the patient, trying to get to know a little bit more about them, also about their family history. Because if they came from a family where both of their parents, all their grandparents, lost their teeth at an early age, they come in with a predisposition, stinking thinking is what I call it, that they are going to lose their teeth after their first baby or before they're 35. And that's just not the case. So we are teaching all of our dental students to get out and really look at that. Get to know your patient. Build a relationship with the patient, because that is trust. When a dentist, a general practitioner, and even our specialists, obviously, are trusted by the patients, they get the dentistry that they need, and we help them manage that disease. Even if there is a financial problem that may curtail them of getting all of the things taken care of, then we can take a treatment plan and divide it up into urgent, important, and we got to get to that last part before it becomes urgent and important, and we can kind of take a bite out of that elephant and eat it at least one bite at a time and be able to help them keep their teeth for a lifetime. At our MOMS program, which I was talking a little bit about at the beginning of this last break, is that everyone that we screened through line got a classroom effect of prevention. In other words, how do I keep from always having an emergent problem that causes me to be in this line in the first place? So they learn about everything from adult fluoride treatment and varnishes to diet to the problems with tooth decay has everything to do with what you drink as much as it is on what you eat. And so everybody gets that shot of new information because they may never have gotten it before.
And just the fact that you can have periodic cleanings that are much more effective than anything you can do yourself with a brush and floss.
Absolutely.
And that is really critical to the whole thing, particularly back to you, Dr. Paramore, and that whole periodontal thing. So
many patients don't realize how much sugar is contained in soft drinks. You know, one of the things we did a demonstration of in one can of Coca-Cola, this is how much sugar is in that Coca-Cola. So we know that there's so many different factors that go into this. But if you can get children early on, another thing we did at our Mission of Mercy was we prepared toothbrush and toothpaste bags for children. We had toddlers, we had boys, girls, and teenagers. And those adults that came, we told them to pay it forward. Mm-hmm. Take these bags home, share this knowledge that you have just received from the dental educators, share it with your children and your grandchildren. If you have five grandchildren, take five bags home and show them, share that knowledge and give them the power of education. And that's really how we can affect the future, is by having our people who are our dental disciples now go out and spread the word that prevention really is dental care that works.
Dental disciples. I really, really, really like that. Well, timing is everything. We are in the midst, of course, of a legislative session, and this House and Senate, they're struggling again with this Medicaid situation. And will there be dental care as part of the Medicaid managed care and all this back and forth? Joanne, your heart, you're looking at me right there. What's the deal on that? And are there enough general practitioner dentists in Florida that even take Medicaid anymore? And how does that work within that whole thing of managed care and stuff that they're talking about?
Well, Tom, one thing that I want to make very clear, when we look at Medicaid, the Medicaid program, the funding is limited that is allocated for Medicaid. And for years before dental was carved into medical under Medicaid, dental has always been separate. And that's one of the things that we support, because we feel that it would be more accountability for the funds. We know that the funds would go more to direct care versus administrative services. And that's one of the things that we've been speaking with the legislators about, is the accountability of the funds. Right now, dental is embedded into the medical plan, but if nothing happens this session with taking that out, it would be carved out by 2019. And again, that's something that we are supportive of. There was an OPAGA study done last year that showed that looking at dental that was carved in versus dental that was carved out. The information was inconclusive because they were trying to do research with a limited amount of time. But we know that when dental was separate from medical under Medicaid, we had more accountability, more information, and less funds going to administrative costs. And that's what we're focusing on, more funds going to direct care.
Okay. Like, we do have one facility here in town down by Railroad Square, Dental Express, that handles, I think, they are the Medicaid provider for pediatric dental care here in
this
area.
Yes, Molar Express is one of those programs that has done a great job in this community, in this area, that is part of the Medicaid program. You know, one of the things which you mentioned as far as how many Medicaid providers are in the state, that number fluctuates depending on if they're actively taking patients. I think one of the issues that the Florida Dental Association is really trying to work on as the Agency for Healthcare Administration, ACA, is re-procuring their contracts with the managed care plans, is a lot of the administrative issues that sometimes are a deterrent for dentists to participate. And I hate to say it this way, a lot of our members would rather just give it away for free than to participate in Medicaid. And one of the things that we know is that in order for them to treat a patient on Medicaid, they would have to become a Medicaid provider. The administrative burdens are such that it at times can be prohibitive, and it delays care versus promote care. A lot of the rules and restrictions with prior authorization can, again, hinder the care that may be emergent and needed immediately before trying to get a prior authorization from one of the managed care companies.
Wow. Is that something else, Drew, that FDA can do? Is as far as the states, since it is a state federal program, something you can maybe try to influence the legislature on, guys? Can we streamline this somehow?
Yes, we are always trying to influence the legislature on that issue. And you take the administrative burden that Joanne was just talking about and add to the fact that Florida is one of the lowest reimbursement states in the country on what they'll pay a dentist in their normal fees. So maybe 30%, 30 cents on the dollar, maybe. You know, we have studies that show states that pay closer to the fee that the dentist would charge. The participation rate goes up significantly, but if you're going to get paid 30 cents on the dollar and deal with extensive administrative burdens, it's hard to try to encourage somebody to participate.
Yeah, if you want to do in a program, just don't pay people to take part in it. Problem solved, right?
Right.
Miriam is on line one, joins us here on Perspectives. Hi, Miriam.
Hi, good morning. I have a few questions. One is, there safe and effective whitening systems that are not harmful to the teeth? Two is, ultrasound toothbrushes better than actually, you know, the brush type?
Okay.
And that's it for now.
Oh, okay. So we got two things. The whitening products that we see, just all kinds of great ads on TV, and then the Sonicare-type toothbrushes. Dr. Bill, what do you think?
It's been proven that the whitening gels that are on the market, which are made up of hydrogen peroxide or carbamide peroxide in doses between 7% and 20%, are all safe and efficacious. Anything stronger than that definitely needs to be administered by a professional, by a dentist. Those definitely are safe if, once again, you are putting them and applying them to your teeth, or a professional is doing that in accordance with the directions. So that horse is out of the barn. So you can safely whiten your teeth. There is many products over the counter and even professionally that can leave some people with a lot of sensitivity, so sometimes you have to mitigate whitening with fluoride gels afterwards in order to basically close the enamel to cold or acidic foods and beverages in order to be able to continue the whitening process efficaciously. And two, yes, there's evidence out there that the sonic toothbrushes seem to be better at removing plaque. But at the same time, somebody who's really good at a manual toothbrush is doing a pretty doggone good job out there, because there have been many, many people for a long time before these new innovations came out that didn't have too many problems. So I'm not sure that I think as we get older, or if an individual just you know, has a lot of biofilm, people can produce more plaque than others. Then I'd say a sonic toothbrush is potentially the way to go. If the checkups always come back where the hygienist or the dentist is saying, you know, Mrs. Jones, you need to come in more often because, it, you know, what you're doing is just not working. And if you've been using a manual toothbrush, then maybe you can try one of the other spin brushes or sonic toothbrushes on the market.
I recall a device that one of my previous dentist had. It was like a sonic toothbrush on steroids. It was called a Cavitron. Do they still use those things?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the ultrasonic scalers that are used. It really does a great job of power washing your tooth roots and a wonderful way to break up that bad biofilm that happens. So, yes, they still do use the ultrasonic scalers. In fact, that has become more useful at controlling periodontal disease than the traditional hand instruments.
And a little bit less painful, too, I noticed.
Much more. One other thing about the sonic toothbrushes, for patients who have limited dexterity, it really has been a big boom for those. People who have, again, arthritis or have had strokes, you can get them to really have a wonderful use of those.
One of the topics, in fact, we'll be pursuing this, I think, within the next couple of weeks on Perspectives, has to do again with dietary considerations and healthier eating. And so much of our discussion today has revolved around just the preponderance of sugar and sugar derivatives in the modern diet, which can be, again, that predisposition to the film, to the gingivitis, to the periodontal disease, to the caries, to all these other horrible things. And not much, I guess, the FDA can do about that, huh, guys?
Educate. You know, one of the things we like to say is sip all day, get decay. is something that helps people remember, you know, it's that constant bathing of your teeth in the sugar. And you'll see a lot of us, well, I don't do it in front of the dentist anyway, with a 32-ounce, 42-ounce soda, and they're just drinking that constantly all day long. And so sip all day, get decay, and it's...
And drink all night, mess up your bite. I don't know.
There you go.
We won't go there. Just a few minutes remaining in this morning's Perspectives. If you have any input here to our members of the Florida Dental Association, the entire leadership team, and the folks who work so hard on this two-year progress report, the comprehensive effort developed by the FDA to improve the oral health and resulting overall health of all Floridians, beyond the legislative outreach and the public education, what else can be done? And you talked to Dr. Bill again about educating dentists, particularly the primary care types here, to bring all this together. What else?
Tom, I think it's just so important that we have those patient navigators to help patients get to the care that exists. There's definitely capacity. In some of our rural communities, that's really where we see a lot greater need. We have transportation issues oftentimes that are impediments to patients getting to the dentist. And so we partnered with the Florida Rural Health Association to work together on Florida's Action for Dental Health. I think it's very important that we realize that in those rural communities, that there are actually almost 30 counties in Florida that have limited access to dentists. So in those areas, we really need to take that redistribution and to help do things to be able to get dentists in those areas where there are none. And that's where we had a legislation last year to work on getting that to happen, to trying to get those individuals in the communities where there's the greatest need.
Okay, Dr. Bill, you want to add something there?
Yeah, I think our viewers many, many times don't really understand the basics to the pathology of dental diseases, whether it's tooth decay, whether it's periodontal or gum disease. In the human mouth, there are over 250 bacteria that have been isolated. Every human has that bacteria. The bacteria is needed because in the mouth, that's the primary place as we chew, and our saliva produces amylase and many other chemicals that help, and enzymes that help break down the food. It's the first place that digestion starts. So we need some of the bacteria because it helps the whole process. But biofilm is bacterial colonization. We used to call it plaque. But plaque in this bacteria feeds on sugars. So if we take in a lot of sweet tea, a lot of colas, a lot of sweet foods, and we do not brush, floss, rinse with water, then what ends up happening is that the biofilm produces acids that eat into your teeth and other enzymes that causes periodontal disease.
And that's where everything starts to head south. Folks, it's been a great show. Thank you so much for taking part in it. Dr. Bill Diotto, Dr. Jolene Paramore, Drew Eason, and Joanne Hart, all with the Florida Dental Association. Thanks for being on Perspectives, guys.
Thank you.
It's our
Thanks,
pleasure.
Thank you, Tom.
Perspectives, produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee, Taylor Cox and Lido Rawls handling all the interface today. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Now that we're on the way to improve dental health, let's load up on some healthy farm fresh produce next week. We'll talk about Florida farming right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.